What made you enter the field of medical regulation? Why is medical regulation so important to your own professional life?
Well, to be very honest, as I think is the case with a lot of practicing physicians, when I put my name forward for election in 2013, I wasn't fully aware of what the scope of medical regulation was, although I did know that, you know, I had some initiatives locally to try to make change within my practice, and I thought it might be an opportunity to, particularly from a systems perspective, might be an opportunity to make change. So I've generally done something that complements clinical work, and so I threw my hat into the ring, and as I've been involved with different committees over the years, I have found it intellectually stimulating, among other things. I've really enjoyed working with the staff at the college and my council colleagues and the public members whose contributions are legend and that I was quite naive about prior to doing this work. But I guess it's like family medicine. I enjoy working as a team in my clinical practice and likewise have enjoyed the team work at the college.
You set it as a goal during your time as CPSO president to increase public engagement. Why is that so important to you? And what does public engagement look like?
Well, I'm going to answer the second question first. I wouldn't be so bold as to suggest that I know what public engagement should look like, and I think that's where I see a place to start, and that is to participate in a bit of an environmental scan about different ways that patients can engage. We know that patient engagement makes for better health outcomes, so I think if we keep that at the cornerstone of this work, it's self-explanatory why I might set it as a priority for my term. I know that the college has had, as its strategic plan, meaningful engagement. I emphasize the word meaningful. I think that's really important. Last year, there was more of an emphasis on the physician engagement because our CEO, Dr. Nancy Whitmore, was very keen to get out to all of the districts, and this was a very successful initiative. This year, it's time to do the same with public engagement. Currently, there is substantial work happening at the college that would fall under the realm of public engagement and outreach, and that includes polling, public consultation for our policies. The college is currently the lead agency for the citizen advisory group that meets regularly to opine on policy work that the different colleges want some input about. There definitely is lots of activity going on. I guess the question is it diverse enough? Are we reaching out to the true stakeholders? So these are sort of the questions that have come up for me that I see this as an opportunity to explore. I do plan to, and I'm excited about this, attend the next meeting of the Citizen Advisory Group to see firsthand how the colleges, and this group is a merger of 9 different colleges within Ontario, to see how they use this group to help shape their policies.
One of the things that you mentioned is this idea that patients are taking more and more ownership over their own health. They have more access to information than they've ever had before, and they're coming into doctor's appointments armed with that information and being more informed than they ever have before. For the physicians of Ontario, what are some things that they should keep in mind when they engage with patients who are more informed and are looking to have that more robust conversation with their doctor?
Well, I think sort of being patient-centered, although it sounds a bit catchphrase, is really the only way to practice good medicine nowadays. I mean, what is the patient's agenda? What do they hope to accomplish at the end of a particular visit? Access to their own information. I mean, I happen to practice in a very mixed neighborhood. I don't feel the same urgency to be quite as electronically enabled as perhaps some patients do of their physicians. I know that's a huge priority among some of the patient family advisory groups to be more technologically, to have their physicians and the system be more technologically enabled. I'm sure it's frustrating for them. So the other part of that would really be open to patients. They often will have done some of their own homework, which, you know, I don't at all discourage. I think it's interesting to note I think there was a lot of fear about when patients could access their own labs that it would result in a lot of patient anxiety. Well, interestingly, I think that has been debunked. That was not the case at all. So I'm ready for that, and I think the most of the profession is also ready for having patients be equal partners at the table.
You've got a year as CPSO president. I know a lot of people in the previous role have said many times that the reason they do this work is because they can have a broader impact on the patients of Ontario. It's not just about your own practice. It's influencing policy and improving healthcare in the province in a broader way After your 12 months are up, what would you like to say about your work as president of CPSO?
Well, I hope that it will be said that I was always true to our mission to serve and protect the public. I really, it's got to be front and center all the time, and I hope that I'm going to be seen as someone who was true to that. Speaking of my own practice, I mean, it has the potential to have suffered a little bit because I'm not there quite as much. I think I've made sort of adequate arrangements for coverage there. But it's interesting. I do feel, having been, you know, instrumental in the continuity of care policy, perhaps an overly inflated sense of responsibility about that. So it does create a bit of a paradox, these dual commitments that I have, both to the individual patient and then more globally to the public.